Hello, I'm Natalie Davis. This is number 0340, the Stuff File Program, with Peter Anthony Holder. And it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File Program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there. Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File Program, number 0340. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File Program, you'll meet Robert Rice, founder and creator of Big Ol' Box of Stuff. He's on to talk about the explosion of comic book superhero movies that has no end in sight.
We have much more to go this year, following up with, you know, the Batman versus Superman, the Civil War, Captain America, Suicide Squad, and Doctor Strange rounding out. There's no end in sight. The nerds are here to stay, shall we say.
John Cristani, the CMO of Nutrist, discusses internet addiction.
This is a subject I feel incredibly strongly about. It's real, it's getting worse, and I'd say it's really infecting the minds of young people and causing people to think with, I call it monkey mind. It's ruining people's attention spans, and it's just dehumanizing a lot of society. It's a massive problem, and it's getting worse.
Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby, shares a slice of the Big Apple from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge. He discusses many things, including the only in New York problem of helicopter traffic.
We have so many of them, especially during the summertime when the rich people take them to go out to the various beach locations, or they zip across Long Island Sound to Connecticut, or they zip across the Hudson River to go to New Jersey. And the people in all these little towns and communities are seizing the opportunity of the winter when traffic is kind of low and they can kind of concentrate on it to get them to cut down on the number of helicopter flights. It's going to be interesting to see how it works out. But, you know, you can imagine if you get yourself a nice $250,000 house and every 5 minutes there's a helicopter going past it, you're not going to be too thrilled.
And there's lots and lots and lots of stuff, and of course, an idiot of the day, the guest later. The person who told you this was show number 0340 was Natalie Davis, the station manager, program director, and basically chief cook and bottle washer at Grateful Dread Public Radio. That's Grateful Dread Public Radio, or GDPR, in Nashville, which offers progressive news, peace, environment, activism, arts, and cultural programs, and now includes the Stuff File Program, heard Mondays at 4 p.m. Central. You can find GDPR Nashville online at gdprnashville.org. And thank you very much, Natalie, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File Program, a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? Now, Brandon Jones went back into a Kilgore, Texas Taco Bueno after the restaurant had left out his son's kid meal, leaving his car running in the parking lot. I ran back up there and didn't think anything about it. Left it running right there by the door so I could get his food and come back home and eat, Jones said. That's when 30-year-old Courtney Wheat allegedly jumped into Jones's car and took off. Thankfully, workers in the restaurant were able to identify Wheat from the job application he had just completed. The lady was like, "He just put in an application," Jones said. I was like, "Are you serious?" Police got Wheat's name and the car's description and were able to locate and arrest him. Now, who goes and applies for a job and then steals a car in the parking lot? That's what a Kilgore police spokesperson asked. Kind of a rhetorical question. Well, I believe the answer to that question is the kind of person who won't be working anytime soon at Taco Bueno. Still with Texas, police in Austin responded to a domestic disturbance. When they arrived and knocked on the front door, a woman shouted, "He won't let me answer the door! He won't let me go!" They kicked down the door to find the tussle was between a woman and her 20-year-old son, who had allegedly set fire to a rug. Now, fire crews were called in to extinguish the blaze. Scout Anthony Thomas Hodge set the fire, he told officers, to make a political statement because he had been watching a TV show about politics that put him in a bad mood. Well, join the club, pal. And also, he wanted to prove that he wasn't a loser. I'm scoring it as an epic failure on that last count, by the way. He was arrested and charged for arson and unlawful restraint. Mom should also make him pay for the new rug, by the way, I think. Anyway, speaking of politics, the United States is in the midst of a long, drawn-out election campaign process, and there are those who wonder out loud about the quality of the candidates that are running. Some say they don't make politicians like they used to. Well, that certainly is the case in this story. In January, Robert Battle took the oath of office for his second term as a city councilman in East Chicago, Indiana. That oath was administered at the county lockup, where he is being held without bail, charged with a cold-blooded murder during a drug deal. The crime made news in October before Election Day, yet Battle still won his race. According to law, he cannot be forced out of office unless he is convicted or admits to the crimes, and he had the right to vote for himself in the election, except that he failed to request an absentee ballot. Yeah, wow. This guy makes Washington's late Marion Barry look like a saint, doesn't he? Yeah. And the head of U.S. Navy intelligence has, for more than 2 years, been prohibited from accessing classified information, as the Pentagon disclosed to the Washington Post in January. Vice Admiral Ted Twig Branch came under investigation in 2013 in a corruption scandal involving a foreign defense contractor and various Navy personnel, and might have been suspended from all duties, except that, given the political gridlock in Washington, no consensus candidate has emerged. No charges have been filed against Branch, but before he enters any room at the Pentagon, classified material must be stowed away. Yeah. That brings new meaning to the term military intelligence, doesn't it? And remember, this is all festering because of political gridlock in Washington, or as I like to call it, constitutional constipation. Think about that with a Supreme Court that currently only has 8 judges. Think about that. And according to police in Minnesota, a husband was arrested on a charge of assault after allegedly shooting a gun at his wife because he got jealous that she spent time with their baby. Police said they have arrested 28-year-old Nicholas George Lehmeyer after being accused of abusing his wife for more than 10 years. The woman told the police that when she was sitting on the couch with the baby, Lehmeyer became upset because she was spending time breastfeeding the child instead of being with him. Lehmeyer grabbed a shotgun, loaded it, and pointed it at her and the child. He then pulled the trigger of the gun, but it did not shoot. Well, if this moron is concerned about not spending time with his wife, just think how he's going to feel now, since I'm sure he's going to spend a lot less time with his wife and his baby. And as far as the kid is concerned, that's probably for the better. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, an employee at Walnut Middle School in Grand Island, Nebraska, saw a box in the band room. It didn't look like a band instrument box to the employee, so the school was evacuated. The police were contacted and the fire department responded, as did the Nebraska State Patrol, with a bomb unit and a dog. The bomb squad figured out it could open the box that was latched, so it did. The highly dangerous contents of the box in the band room turned out to be an accordion. It is not clear to whom it belonged, although it might actually be the school district's accordion. Yeah. The band teacher hadn't seen the box before, school district safety coordinator Rick Ressel said. Ressel added that middle school practices evacuating routinely and that this evacuation took less than 2 minutes, maybe just 1 minute. Well, that's lovely. Still, he says there'd be a debriefing to see whether the evacuation process can be improved. All this over an accordion. Gee, do you think maybe the next step will be to put Weird Al Yankovic on the terrorist watch list? Yeah. Anyway, let's get to our first guest, shall we? The popularity of superhero movies continues, and with the recent record box office record set by the R-rated Deadpool, there doesn't seem to be an end in sight. Robert Rice is a comic industry expert and the founder and creator of Big Old Box of Stuff, a nerd retro box filled with a touch of today and a splash of yesterday's hottest trends. He joins us on the line right now from South Carolina. Hi, Robert.
Hello, how are you today?
Just tickety-boo. Thank you very much for doing this. And I do want to talk about the Big Old Box of Stuff in a few moments. But first, let's talk about this trend. Last year, 2015, it was about a 50-50 split between movies that were of superheroes and movies that were not. And do you see that trend continuing, especially with the success of Deadpool this recent week?
Oh, absolutely. We have much more to go this year, following up with the Batman versus Superman, the Civil War, Captain America, Suicide Squad, and Doctor Strange rounding out. There's no end in sight. The nerds are here to stay, shall we say.
And has the growth of the superhero movie, has that spurred on a growth within the comic industry as well? Or is it the other way around?
It really has. I think they both work off of each other. I mean, we're talking movies, television as well, have some great series on there too. And like I say, the comic industry has shifted dramatically from when I was growing up in the 70s and 80s, where it was, being a nerd wasn't cool. But guess what? Nowadays, being a nerd, that's not too bad. We have a lot to go off, and we have a lot of geek nerd women as well, which isn't a bad thing.
Well, as someone who grew up as a comic book aficionado, what were you into when you were a kid, and is it different from what you're into now?
My interests stay the same, but the way they're conveyed to the audience is completely different. It's a lot more mature. I like the Batman and Spider-Man, my two favorites. They have grown tremendously in their story arcs, and just their characters have matured a lot. And it's not just, let me go stop this robber from robbing this bank. It's, Captain America versus Iron Man, two good guys fighting, but for the better good. And they give a lot of good story behind it, and the people behind the masks, and who have real life situations and that we can all, sort of relate to. So it's very relatable to, the everyday man, more or less.
Well, it's
just great.
Speaking of relatable, as someone who is such a fan as yourself of growing up of comic books, do you find that the films that have come out in the last little while and the ones that are scheduled to come out, do you find that for the most part they're faithful to the image and the idea of the character you enjoyed from the comic book, or is it an entirely different realm?
They like to sprinkle in nostalgia more so than really face it head on. The stories are genuinely the same for the most part, but being Hollywood, they do take their liberties, pretty much wherever they want. And it can either be a really, really good thing or a really, really disastrous thing, especially if you're a diehard fan of that particular genre.
Okay, so in your estimation, what has been the most, shall we say, and we can include television and film here, what has been the best depiction you've seen of a comic making it to either the small or big screen? And conversely, what do you think has been the worst?
I really enjoy the most recent Batman movies, the Chris Nolan films, especially 1 and 2. 3, I could take a lead, but they've been really dark and gritty, which is, I believe, what Batman should be, and it's really, really taking it a step forward. I believe the new Punisher that's coming out in the Daredevil series on Netflix is really, really going to hit the mark to a lot of fans and really knock it out of the park. So they're coming a long way, and they're maintaining the dignity of their comic book more or less. You're going to have your fans that love it. You're going to have your fans that hate it. But, hey, guess what? So is life.
Okay, so
I typically enjoy them.
So, again, on the other side, even though you typically enjoy them, there must be a film out there or a television show that disappointed you.
I believe the biggest one, this year, No, last year, I'm sorry. I'm getting mixed up here. The Fantastic Four really, really bombed at theaters. I personally did not see it just because I'm not really a fan of Fantastic Four, but it just goes to show that, you know, fans will either embrace it or really, really kick it, you know, kick it down the street. The ones that I've been most impressed with have been the Spider-Man series and the Captain America and Iron Man series have done phenomenally well in my eyes.
As I said, 50-50 split last year, basically, with comic book movie fair, and that could be even more in 2016. Do you think, I mean, as someone as yourself, who is a comic book aficionado, would you even say that maybe that's too much?
You know, there's a funny thing. I would rather see, you know, my heroes live on through different books and different movies and TV, and other than just kind of die off like a lot of characters do. However, on that aspect, you know, you do run the risk of being oversaturated and enough's enough. And how many times can, you know, this bad guy fight this good guy and it be different and fresh and new? So you run the risk of it growing stale. So, you know, on that aspect, it's, you know, it's a bad thing.
Well, on the topic of dying off, what would be your favorite comic book character who maybe hasn't been seen on the pages for a while, maybe hasn't been seen on the big screen, that you think should be? Who's missing?
Oh, gosh, that's a really good question. You blindsided me on that one. I would say it's kind of old school, but The Tick. The old comic, cartoon, The Tick, the big right. blue guy with the antenna. I think he would be outstanding. I think he would be up there with Daredevil but Deadpool as far as having, you know, a good comedy audience and just being really, really fun to watch.
Well, they did try it as a comedy series a few years ago, but it didn't work.
Yeah, but like I say, if they had the budget and a good writer, I really think that could be really fun to see.
Okay. Well, I promised to talk about Big Old Box of Stuff because, you know, you have a company called Big Old Box of Stuff. You're going to get questions, right? People are going to say, what does it all mean? So tell us about Big Old Box of Stuff.
All right. You go to the website, bigoldboxofstuff.com. You look around. You go to the questionnaire page. And you fill out the questionnaire based upon your likes of what you like, whether it be horror, superheroes, science fiction, or pretty much everything. You can check everything. And you subscribe for either 1 month or 3 months, and that month you will receive a box catered specifically to you, unlike these other boxes that give you that one size fits all. Everybody gets the same thing. In our boxes, if you watch unboxing videos on YouTube, everyone gets something different.
And what kinds of things are in there?
You're going to have your comic books, your action figures, magnets, buttons, various wheel trinkets, high-end collectibles. I do throw in some vintage stuff every now and again. It's really just a surprise. It's whatever I get in my inventory and have on stock. And what I think that the customer would really, really appreciate.
Now, would it be fair to say that Big Old Box of Stuff is kind of guy-centric, you know, for the kid in us who never grew up? Or do you have a lot of women who are customers who enjoy not only getting, or not only giving, rather, a Big Old Box of Stuff, but getting one?
When I first started out, it was primarily male. But now, I really, honestly... I haven't done a tally yet. I probably need to, but I would say it's 50-50.
Really?
Really. I mean, it surprises me just as much. You know, like I say, growing up a nerd, and that was uncool, and girls didn't like it. But these days, hey, there's plenty of girl nerds out there, and they want, you know, they want the same things we want as far as, you know, nerd stuff. So, yeah, it's about 50-50. It really is.
How did you come up with the idea of the Big Old Box of Stuff? Because it certainly is a fun idea.
Absolutely. I was introduced to one of my competitors a couple of years ago, and I just started thinking, I said, well, this is great, but half of this stuff that's in this box that they sent me, I don't want or I don't care anything about. And then I just started thinking, well, you know, why can't I make something that everybody's going to enjoy because they pick what goes in it more or less.
Again, it's a big old box of stuff, and we should mention the website, big old box of stuff, and it's big old is B-I-G-O-L, boxofstuff.com. Robert, thank you very much for talking with us about superhero movies and telling us a little bit about Big Old Box of Stuff.
Thank you for having me.
Robert Rice, comic industry expert and the founder and creator of Big Old Box of Stuff. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for the show, which is show number 0340, and you'll find links to Robert's site.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander Show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of The Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick, if you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands. Just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
Coming to you from Canada, the land of universal healthcare, colorful money, and the correct spelling of the word theater. This is The Stuff File with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk about internet addiction. Plus, Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby, will share a slice of the Big Apple from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge. We do have a idiot of the day coming your way. And also, more Stuff File news right here, right now, on a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. And by the way, you know, last week, those who listened via Stitcher, you know, Stitcher was down for a little bit. They were down for about 4 days. And you really never know how important something is to you and the rest of the world when it's taken away from you. So thanks and kudos to the folks at Stitcher Smart Radio for getting the system back up and running. By the way, there's about 20,000 radio shows and podcasts that you can listen to via Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher is, of course, the smarter way to listen to radio when it's up and running. Anyway, back to the Stuff File news. In January, David Boulay in Tacoma, Washington, became the most recent to haplessly try to steal a police car. As officers chased him on an earlier charge, Boulay spotted a parked, marked squad car with lights flashing, but apparently thought, in the darkness of night, that the car was momentarily unoccupied. He climbed in and landed on the lap of a Tacoma police sergeant who was in the front seat. Oh, that's just too convenient. And also, way too cozy. Don't you think? Yes. And when Debbie Matthews applied for a license from Glendale, Colorado, to open a marijuana store called The Smokin' Gun, the city council tied in its approval vote. Mayor Mike Dunifan recused himself from breaking the tie because Matthews was his girlfriend. But later, he went ahead and broke the tie, voting to issue her the license. Matthews isn't Dunafin's girlfriend anymore. She's now his wife. Colorado Ethics Watch has filed an ethics complaint against the mayor, but Glendale City Attorney Jeff Springer said the complaint is much ado about nothing because the couple wasn't married at the time of the vote. The pot shop is next door to Shotgun Willie's, an infamous strip club that Matthews also owns. Wow. The ideal wife for a guy like that used to be a stripper who owned a liquor store, but I guess that was before pot was legal. Times, they are a-changin'. And overexcited police departments occasionally feel the need to safeguard towns by zealous enforcement of anti-gambling laws. Now, in November, police in Altamont Springs, Florida, raided the Escondido Community Clubhouse, formally shutting down the retirement village's games of bingo, bunco, penny poker, and most controversially, the weekly sessions of the culturally venerated mahjong. Now, although none of the games is illegal under state law, advertising for money games is, and the notices in the Heritage Florida Jewish News were such attention getters that the pots for the games often grew to exceed the $10 legal maximum. Ooh. And given Mahjong's sociological significance, news of the bust was even reported in Jerusalem's Times of Israel. Now, going after sweet little old Jewish seniors might be too big of a match for some Florida law enforcement. I'm guessing we haven't heard the last of this story. And you know, I remember about a decade ago sharing stories about several fast food restaurants, especially during evening shifts, staffed by sometimes inadequately trained managers that were plagued by prank phone callers posing as law enforcement requesting investigative help, asking managers to strip search employees for contraband and to describe the searches in real time to the caller. Yeah, there are some people who used to fall for that. A suspect was actually arrested and the calls were stopped. Well, flash forward to today, another story. In a somewhat similar vein, managerial judgment was also on display again recently in a Morro Bay, California Burger King in January, where a prank caller somehow convinced BK employees to begin shattering the store's windows because of a purported gas leak. Several windows were smashed in, and an investigation of the call is ongoing. Yes, the food may be fast, but the staff is considerably slower. Police in Illinois were able to identify the suspect in a photo booth theft after the machine was activated during the robbery. The booth at Funway Amusements captured photos of the suspect who pried open the machine's cash drawer and stole $75 in cash and caused $75 worth of damage, according to the Batavia Police Department. When the man attempted to open the photo booth's cash drawer, the machine automatically began to take photos. The machine is designed to take photographs when it senses tampering to the cash drawer, Batavia police said. The report was delayed until the owner could get a repairman to pull the offending images from the machine. Ain't technology grand? Smile, you're on Candid Camera. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, we have a couple of stories here that could come under the heading of religious weed. Number one, the Albany, New York company Vero Health told reporters it would soon offer the world's first certified kosher marijuana, announcing that the Orthodox Union of New York had authenticated it as having met Jewish dietary laws, for instance, grown with insect-free plants. Now, other kosher validating officials complained that the approval should apply only to marijuana that is eaten, not smoked. And story number two, two habit-wearing nuns were scheduled to ask the Merced, California County, or City Council, rather, in January, to decline its prerogative under state law to ban dispensing or cultivating medical marijuana. The nuns' order makes and sells salves and tonics for pain management using a strain of cannabis containing only a trace of psychoactive material. You know, Stories about religion and marijuana shouldn't be so unusual. Now, I have heard from some people that when they use marijuana, they've seen God. So there you go. The Lord does work in mysterious ways. On to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Internet addiction, sometimes referred to as cyberspace addiction or online addiction, can manifest itself in many ways in today's teens. So, is it a real thing? And if so, what can we do about it? On the line right now is Google and automation expert John Cristani, the CMO of Nutrist, a private nutraceutical affiliate network, and we'll talk a little bit about that and his company later. He joins us on the line via Skype from Los Angeles. Hi, John.
Hey, guys. How's it going? Just hanging out here.
Thanks for being on the program with us. So tell me, internet addiction, as I said in the introduction, is it a real thing? Is it something we should be concerned about?
So this is a subject I feel incredibly strongly about. It's real, it's getting worse, and it's actually, I mean, pardon the harsh language, but it is, I'd say it's really infecting the minds of young people and causing people to think with, I call it monkey mind, but it's ruining people's attention spans, it's ruining, and it's just dehumanizing a lot of society. It's a massive problem, and it's getting worse.
Okay, so how do you see it manifesting itself? What are the biggest problems you see with this?
People can't focus anymore, Peter. people can't hold a conversation without jumping to their cell phone or you know, without texting somebody or without, you know, we can't go to a concert anymore and just sit back with our, you know, wife or girlfriend and enjoy the music. We have to hold up our phones and be filming it so we could post online later, post on Facebook.
So how do we stop this? I mean, is this just a runaway train that cannot be stopped?
So I and obviously I haven't gone into all the crazy ways this really just takes people's, takes away really the humanness of daily interactions from people. And I think it's making us unhappier actually as a nation. But I mean, the ways to stop it are really, you know, just like what you're doing is fabulous. Helping people realize what's going on so that people can make a conscious choice, because I think most people don't even understand that it's an addiction.
You know, last summer I was walking around in downtown Montreal and I saw a family of tourists. It was a father and husband and wife and two teenage daughters. And three of them, the parents and one of the daughters, were looking around in awe like people do when they're tourists. They look at the architecture and they take in the sights and the sounds. And you could tell they're tourists because they look like tourists. And the fourth person, the other daughter, was walking behind them and had her face in a phone. And never looked up. And I made a point of stopping and just watching them go into the distance because I figured, she could be looking up at something on Google about one of the things she's seeing. But no, she never looked up.
Wow. and see, I mean, like, what are people, you have to think, you know, what experiences are people missing out on? But also, you know, I feel what phones do and internet addiction in general is it dulls down our experience of the world so that, you know, we would rather experience, let's say, new places through just a 1080 by 90 image rather than actually being able to, you know, experience the smells, the sights, the sounds, the wind, I think that's really sad. And I think it's, you know, people are losing appreciation for, you know, what really makes us human at the end of the day.
Okay, so I called you because you're someone who's in a business.
Sorry,
No, because you deal with this, you talk about it online, you have a business that is online. So obviously you feel strongly about it. how, you must have a theory as to how we can do something about it.
Yeah, so the biggest thing for me is I've created a very clear divide. Now, my business is an online business. I run what's called an affiliate network, but the thing is, you know, I have a very clear separation. You know, one of the things I teach, you know, online is, look, the computer is great. The internet is great because we can use it to leverage ourselves, just like you're leveraging the power of radio. We can use it to leverage ourselves to greater audiences. But at the same time, we have to understand that's a dual-edged sword. And we have to also honor the fact that these tools are meant to be used to create the life we desire, not to take over our life.
Do you think this is a situation where the pendulum is swung one way and it's bound at some point to swing back, or is it stuck? I mean, we're talking basically about teenagers who use phones all the time. Is this something that is going to be part of their DNA and their personality as they age, or is it something that they're going to outgrow?
I believe it's going to get, unfortunately, Peter, I believe it's going to get worse before it gets better. There are movements out there to really, really take back control over our screen use. But with the advent all these countries everybody is having mobile phones now. I believe the most important thing is to raise awareness about this issue, though, like what you're doing.
It's an interesting issue indeed. I promised that I would talk a little bit about your company, Nutryst, mm-hmm. which is Nutryst.
S-T, yeah.
Tell us what Nutryst is about.
So what it actually, it's a combination of the word nutrition and tryst, which is tryst is a rendezvous of lovers. So it literally means a rendezvous of nutrition lovers. But basically what I do is I teach people how to create their own businesses online. I teach people how to leverage the power of the internet to basically create a business that enables them to be who, you know, to focus their time on what they really want. And that's really been what I've done with my life. You know, my goal, my thing has been traveling. I travel around the world. I have a wife out here in LA, and, you know, but I'm trying to help others do the same.
Okay, so having a business that does this, and I'm not criticizing or anything, but some people will look at commercials done by liquor companies who advertise drink responsibly. And cynics don't believe it because their product is something that they want to sell a lot of. You see where I'm getting at here?
I see exactly what you're getting at. Now, I'm a Buddhist, and one of the things is in Buddha, one of the things you subscribe to in Buddhism is kind of the middle path, which is, nothing in excess. You know, you try to bring balance to your life, and part of bringing balance, on one end, I'm not going to say don't use the internet because it's very powerful, but on the other, because it's very powerful and it's a great wealth creation tool. But I think it's so dangerous, and there is so little information about the fact that it is addicting. That's the big problem. I understand what you're saying. I'm teaching people to use the internet, but at the same time, I'm saying don't use it too much. But I believe there is a happy medium there. The same goes for, it's like, I'm trying to think. French fries. I love French fries. I'll eat them all day, but. It's not about cutting it out of your diet completely. It's, enjoy, have some moments of enjoyment, but don't overdo it.
Everything in moderation.
Exactly. And that makes sense to me, so.
How can people find out more information about what your company, Nutryst, does?
I would actually send people to my my personal website, just John Crestani, J-O-H-N. Crestani. It's Italian name. Nobody's going to spell it correctly. But yeah, I would just tell people to search my name and, if they're interested in learning, more about me and what I do.
And there is the site grow.nutryst.com, correct?
Yeah. And that's my main company. Yeah.
Excellent. John, thank you very much for being on the program with us. It was a pleasure to talk to you, and share some of your concerns about the possible overuse of the internet.
Yeah, it was great speaking with you as well. And by the, just thank you so much for raising awareness about this issue. I think it, you know, it's massive, and I really respect that you're doing that. I think it's really great.
John Cristani, the CMO of Nutrist. You can go to my website at thestuffile.com, go to the What's On page for the show, which is show number 0340, and you'll find the links to John's sites. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRico Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. Yosemite National Park in California is known as one of the most beautiful places on Earth. Its spectacular granite cliffs and waterfalls inspired Native Americans to call the place Awani, meaning place of the gaping mouth. So in 1927, when the Park Service opened a beautiful hotel in Yosemite, they named it the Awani. One of its early employees was an aspiring photographer named Ansel Adams. Over the years, the Awani has been threatened by forest fires and storms, but it has always survived, until now. You see, the company hired by the federal government to run the hotel 23 years ago has lost its contract, and it's suing the United States, saying it owns the trademark on the name Awani. So, while the hotel itself will survive, the name won't. Let's be fair, the Park Service says the name wasn't part of the deal with the company, but with legal deadlines approaching, the iconic hotel where Queen Elizabeth and John F. Kennedy once stayed is now being renamed. Learn more. Visit our website at centerforamericatv.org.
If you or someone you care about is struggling with food and body image issues, don't ignore the signs. Eating disorders are serious, potentially life-threatening illnesses, but recovery is possible, and you don't have to suffer alone. Call the National Eating Disorders Association helpline at 800-931-2237 or visit nationaleatingdisorders.org to take a confidential online eating disorder screening. Recovery is possible.
From our studios in Montreal, Canada, and going out to the rest of the world, this is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Now, the Stuff File presents the Gabby Cabby, direct from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge in the city that never sleeps, New York. Once again, here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And we do indeed have Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby from New York City. Hello, sir.
Hello, hello, hello. Live from the beautiful streets of New York City.
Nice to talk to you once again. Now, I know recently, because you had that big election campaign going on in your neck of the woods, down below the 49th parallel, I know Bernie Sanders took a TV anchor guy on a tour of his old neighborhood in New York, in Brooklyn.
Yeah, well, here's the thing, and I really, I feel almost shy about talking about this, but I really have to in a way, because nobody else is. Nobody really realized he was Jewish, which means just like Hillary Clinton presumably could be the first lady president, he could be the first Jewish president. Well, it's very obvious that she's a lady, even when she's wearing slacks, or I should say a woman. But Bernie has really low-keyed this thing, where a lot of people are very surprised at this stage of the game to find out that he is Jewish. And I think he added insult to injury the other day by going back to a place called Midwood. It's a section of Brooklyn, which is a very Jewish neighborhood, where presumably he grew up. And even the people in the neighborhood were surprised, because number one, they were surprised because they too were finding out he was Jewish. And they were also surprised because they didn't really think of him being there. I mean, we have the same situation with Obama. Obama went to Columbia University. If you go to that neighborhood, nobody remembers him being there. So it can either be maybe he wasn't there, maybe Bernie wasn't there, or maybe they just had very nondescript lives. But in any event, he's what, and I've now coined this phrase, he's a closet Jew. Or he could be a closet black. It'll be a little bit harder to be a closet black. But, you know, somebody who is something and for some strange reason kind of denies it. Now, if I've enraged all your listeners, I'm terribly sorry.
Well, maybe it's the fact that, you know, I live in Montreal, which borders Vermont, and we know about Bernie. It was never a secret that Bernie was Jewish. The fact that you're saying people didn't know kind of surprises me.
Well, that's the way it turned out. And also, some statistics we used released in the last couple of weeks, that there's been a huge exodus of Jewish people from the Upper West Side of Manhattan who have, you know, moved to Vermont to get away from who knows what. So it's a little sticky thing. He's not going anywhere. My prediction is Hillary, unless she's in jail, against Trump.
Wow. That's, wow. I'm just going to leave that alone. Let's just move along and talk about transportation. You are in the transportation business. You drive a cab, and you have to compete with public transit out there, the occasional Uber out there, and now I understand helicopters.
Yeah, well, I'm not competing with them, but no, we have so many of them, especially during the summertime when the rich people take them to go out to the various beach locations, or they zip across Long Island Sound to Connecticut, or they zip across the Hudson River to go to New Jersey. And the people in all these little towns and communities are seizing the opportunity of the winter when traffic is kind of low and they can kind of concentrate on it to get them to cut down on the number of helicopter flights. So it's going to be in flights. It's going to be interesting to see how it works out. But, you know, you can imagine if you get yourself a nice $250,000 house and every 5 minutes there's a helicopter going past it, you're not going to be too thrilled.
Are they cutting in at all into the excellent tours that you give of New York?
No, and as a matter of fact, the one thing about New York City, when you mentioned with all the different cabs and the Uber and the limousines and this, that, and the other thing, there is, I mean, we have at any given moment, well, now it's evening time that I'm talking to you, but at any given moment, we have 50,000 taxis on the streets of New York, and you still can't get a cab.
Wow. Okay. Meanwhile, I'm just curious to know, have you tried the new New York City rage, the cookie milkshake?
No, I haven't, because I want to stay svelte and beautiful, but it's the new rage. And the reason it's the new rage, and I have a picture of it on my website, gabby.com, is because of the fact that some store started making it. And so right away it was $15 and about 2,000 calories. And I, of course, would have been the first to say, nobody's going to buy it. Well, of course, everybody bought it. And now other stores are doing it. And they're making it 3,000 calories and $25. So you can imagine walking into a place and saying, let me have five of those super milkshakes at $25 each. That's a lot of sweets for the kiddies.
$25 each?
Yeah, that's gotten to that now. It started off at 15.
Yikes.
That's right. We have people in New York, my friend. We have 600,000 people who are classified as millionaires. That means they can write out a check for $1 million. If you come up with any idea, any project, any building, any this, any that, and it's successful, there's plenty of people to go there. It costs you $34 to go to the World Trade Center. They don't have any kind of a problem. It costs you $25 to go to the Statue of Liberty. Doesn't cost you a problem. Doesn't make a problem for you. There's a lot of rich people here. Unfortunately, I'm the poorest person here, and you're the poorest person in your town.
And speaking of buildings, by the way, I understand real estate developers are trying to claim a property occupied by a community garden. What's the deal there?
Well, in the good old days, see, when you say the good old days, that means you're getting old. What used to happen is that if a building was pulled down, it would have a vacant lot. And the new owners are going to build something on it, but temporarily they may not have the funding, they may not know what they do. So the habit was always, or the custom, was to let local people use it as a garden. I mean, it's kind of nifty. So you'd make a little community garden, you'd raise corn and as high as an elephant's eye, and it was nice. Well, what's happening now is that the booming industry of landlords and housing in New York City has gotten so rough that a lot of those yards, let's call them, are being taken back by the landlords, by the builders, and throwing the people off. And the other day, they actually had some people who were arrested, which is just, you wonder, what is the mentality of the cop who's told to go into a garden and arrest little old ladies who are growing wheat? Well, not wheat, but something.
Well, as long as it's not weed.
Yeah. Well, that probably happens too, but that's not the issue. Now, is it the right of the owner to have his property and build a 60-story building? Of course, but, you know, you got to work something out.
Yeah. Got to get along. Can't we all just get along? I believe that's a quote somebody said.
Yes, get along.
Yes, exactly. Now, I understand that the 50 highest-paid New York State employees work for the City University of New York. How does that happen?
Yeah, now, well, listen, I don't have anything against teachers or people in the teaching industry, but I've said for a long time when I'll visit with some teacher who's come from Vancouver or some teacher who's come from London, and I tell them the salaries that not only the teachers make in New York, but the administrators make in New York, you're talking big bucks. So this report came out that said 50 of the highest paid employees in New York, people, are in the teaching business. So, you know, they're entitled to make a good living, but I don't hear any complaints from anybody who's worked for our educational system.
Mm. Meanwhile, let's talk a little bit about Goldman Sachs, if we're spending money. They have a cozy relationship with the Malaysian government.
Well, it looks like it's the latest scandal. You know, there's so much problems that go on with these different banking firms. People say to me, is there still a mafia in New York City? And I say, no, they all work for the banks. But the fact of the matter is that Goldman Sachs has been doing some wheeling dealing with that government, and they're being investigated by the FBI. And, you know, these are the same guys that brought us the real estate problems and all of that. The thing is, if you pay attention to all this stuff that goes on in the United States, the companies get fined, which is all very nice, but nobody ever goes to jail.
Yes, that is true. In the meantime, speaking of going to jail, because I you know, he was the star of the movie The Wolf of Wall Street, but you have a celebrity sighting that's rather interesting.
Yeah, it was doubleheader.
Doubleheader, yeah.
Because that's not a picture I took, the one that's on the website. But because I just saw them there, but I looked for a picture that would be nice. It was Leonardo DiCaprio and Al Pacino. And that's quite a bunch of money there. Or was it Robert De Niro?
Robert De Niro, I think it was, on your site.
Yeah,
yes,
it was. I lost my list. That's what happened. Peter, you got to understand, you get old, you lose your mind.
So where did you see
people.
Where did you see Leo and Bobby?
Outside the Plaza Hotel. There was some kind of a function. And they came walking down the steps. And everybody just, I mean, normally I would report to you that I saw such and such a celebrity, and nobody even noticed them or didn't look at them or didn't see him. That created some attention, because I was thinking to myself, can you imagine how much it would cost to have those two guys together do a movie or a commercial?
Hmm. Quite a few bucks. Did they get into your cab?
No, they didn't get into my cab.
So they've missed the
opportunity. They actually walked away.
Okay. So they've missed the opportunity of having one of your great tours of New York.
Well, that's very gracious, because then I would have put your show on the radio in the cab.
And by the way, people can find out more information about those tours by going to your website, which is www.gabby.com, correct?
Yeah, and it's really getting to be terrific. I mean, I'm updating you with hot stories every day, and it really is.
Excellent. Peter, it's always a pleasure to have you on the program.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
The Stuff File.
And we're just about a racetrack for this edition of the Stuff File program. We do indeed have an idiot of the day coming your way in just a matter of moments. But first, I got a couple of stories or items from the corruption news. Three, to be exact. We like to say this is called the corruption news, which makes me worry about the morals of our societies based on these compelling explanations. Number one, Italy's highest court freed a man in January because the bribe he offered a cop to avoid a DUI ticket was too small to be serious. 100 euros, or about 108 bucks US. So apparently, if you're too cheap to properly bribe, then it's not a bribe at all. Number two, lawyers for John Bills, former Chicago City Commissioner on trial for taking bribes on a traffic camera contract, said Bills was obviously innocent because everyone knows that in Chicago, only bribing the mayor, or at least an alderman, will get anything done. Again, a sad, sad, sad reasoning. And number three, a security guard in Nairobi, Kenya, despairingly told a New York Times reporter in November, detailing corruption so rampant that, for example, ballpoint pens were being sold to the government for $85 each. He said that if people are going to steal, please just steal a little. Wow. Just steal a little. Again, Those three items are just so sad on so many levels. Anyway, we're near the end of our program. You know what that means, boys and girls. It's time now for the Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the Strange Things Adults Do. This stuff all presents the Idiot of the Day.
This is the story of an age-old prank from a bygone era that failed miserably. 19-year-old Will Lombardi was charged with arson in Northampton, Massachusetts in January after he acknowledged that probably he was the one who left a flaming box of excrement on the front porch of the family with whose daughter he was feuding. The fire was supposed to alarm the victim, who would try to stomp it out, thus spreading the feces and soiling the stomper's shoes. Well, in this case, however, the fire had spread a bit. But here's the idiot part, which earns extra bonus points. Lombardi's box selection was a used mailer with Lombardi's name and address still readable. Yeah, now, why, oh why, when you're planning the famous flaming dung trick, would you put the pyro poo in a box that has your name and address on it? One reason, and one reason only, you're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0340. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links and all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0340. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as PA Holder. And don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, GDPR in Nashville, KDX Radio, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes and Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
You've been getting jiggy with Peter Anthony Holder and the Stuff File program, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. He's a bad mamma jamma, and after he spends some chill time in his crib, he'll be back to get down with his bad self. Word up!